Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
And welcome in FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty with you. Hope everyone's doing well out there. The number, 251-343-0106. You can text us at that number and also give us a call at that number. Corey, how you doing tonight?
Too blessed to be stressed, Dalton. Always a pleasure to join you on Sports Night. Kind of takes our mind away from everything that's going on in the world.
It does. And tough time to be out there in the world right now, which all of us are. And you want to keep up on the latest with coronavirus and how it's affecting us here locally as well as the rest of the United States. Well, you can catch Sean and myself, Mobile Morning 6 to 9 every morning, and then again on Midday Mobile, Sean from noon to 2. But that's why I enjoy this Monday night show so much. Get to get away from the coronavirus talk and the politics talk and talk some sports. Unfortunately, as we all know, coronavirus has made its way into the sports world to the point where no sports are being played, but still plenty to talk about. And we've got a couple great guests tonight coming up in this next segment. We're going to talk with the Reese's Senior Bowl Executive Director, Jim Nagy, and the Senior Bowl this weekend unveiling something really cool. They're helping out with the kids from college that are trying to get drafted in the NFL draft and how they can make pro day videos since so many pro days have been canceled. So we're going to talk with Jim about that. Also get his take on some of the prospects that are getting ready for the draft that's still scheduled to go on in April. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. And then on the other side of the half hour, we're going to talk with Greg Allman, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for The Athletic. And what a time to be a Buccaneers fan, because they just signed only the greatest quarterback of all time, Tom Brady, who's taking his talents from New England down to Tampa Bay. And we're going to talk with Greg Allman about what all that means for Tampa Bay. The NFC South pretty much try to cover every single side of the Tom Brady signing that went official just last week. But first, we're going to get through some of these headlines. Then we're going to get Jim Nagy on the phone. And I had to start it with this headline. I haven't heard many people talking about it, but some great news. Sir Charles Barkley, he ended up testing negative for coronavirus. Remember, it was just about a week and a half ago that he announced on the Inside the NBA on TNT that he was being tested for coronavirus. He said he got sick and was self-isolating and had been tested, and finally we got the results back for Sir Charles, and it turns out negative for the coronavirus. So that's good news. I don't know, I haven't checked in lately if they're still doing Inside the NBA at all or if they've completely cut that out, because obviously not much to talk about in the world of NBA, but good thing that Sir Charles is healthy, and hopefully that continues for him and for everyone else out there. Also, I said that most of the live sports have been canceled, and that's true from everything here in America down to, I think, the Australian Football League finally canceled their season this last weekend, the rugby that they play down there. But NASCAR ended up getting creative and put together a really cool event over the weekend. You know, it wasn't true NASCAR racing, and they were, if none of this had happened, they were going to be racing in Miami at Homestead, Miami on Sunday, but that race was suspended. They went ahead and suspended every race through May the 3rd, including Talladega, but they did say that NASCAR is going to try to finish the entire schedule if they get the opportunity to, the entire 36-race schedule. But instead, this weekend, they found a way to put on a live show for fans on TV through virtual iRacing, and what we ended up with was 35 NASCAR drivers competing in a 100-lap race from their very own living rooms at a virtual Homestead Miami racetrack, and there was even some drama at the end. It looked like Dale Earnhardt Jr. was going to win, and Denny Hamlin passed him after turn four on the last lap, even bumped him. I mean, a dangerous maneuver from Denny Hamlin, and knocked Jr. to the bottom of the track. Jr. still ended up finishing second, but Denny Hamlin wins the race, and it might have been because of Hamlin that they put this race on to begin with. He's a big-time player in iRacing. He's just He's won all kinds of races. I think he said that his rig cost about $40,000. It's amazing what these – some of them were racing with like $200, $500 rigs, but he had a whole outfit put out there in his garage or wherever he was racing from. He ends up winning the race. You even had the real broadcasters on there with Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon. And I know when Hamlin made that final pass, Jeff Gordon said, "And the fans are going wild." In the grandstands, obviously virtual fans, but pretty cool. They broadcast it on Fox Sports 1, and it was cool to see some original new content coming out while ESPN's playing all the rest of the classics that we're all getting used to.
You know, it had no points. There was no purse. There were no actual race cars. But anytime you can simulate online virtually, it just lets you know technology. And when you have a wreck in esports or virtual sports, it just lets you know, again, you mentioned how much the contraption costs to put in a basement, but anytime you have 35 simulators in a man cave or a basement, that makes for an interesting situation. And really, NASCAR car is the only sport in which you can kind of simulate something like that, because in basketball or football you have to have 11 people, but you're looking at golf. I think golf may go ahead and try some simulating as well.
Maybe some golden tee. Are they going to pick up Tiger Woods PGA Tour? I don't know.
Very possible, Dalton. So look for golf coming down the stretch to say, hey, look, this may be an open avenue to go ahead and get all our fans involved, but a great NASCAR idea.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even mind seeing. It wouldn't be the same, but maybe NBA players playing a game of 2K or some Madden players. I don't know. There's a lot of directions they could go with that. Obviously, it's not as good as the real thing. But why don't we could talk about that later in the show. What virtual game would you like to see being played out there? I make fun of e-games all the time. Like, who wants to watch somebody play video games? But if you're watching the pros play as themselves in a video game, I don't know, there's something kind of fun about that. Unfortunately, some bad news today. The 2020 Summer Olympics, there's been a lot of talk about those. They were set to be held in Tokyo coming up at the end of July. And lots of pressure put on the International Olympic Committee. And they finally today said that looks like the Tokyo Olympics will be postponed. And that came after yesterday Canada and Australia, their Olympic committees put a lot of pressure on the IOC, said that if they did hold the games this summer, they wouldn't send athletes out to the games. And it makes sense, you know, these athletes, even if this was all magically cleared up here in the next few weeks, the athletes aren't training right now. Or if they are training, they're not training to the full extent that they would be if they were with their teams and doing the normal routine. But it does look like the Summer Olympics are going to be postponed, and they're putting 2021 out there as a date, so a year delay for the Summer Olympics now.
I mean, that's huge news when you look at it, and it's not just international companies or teams. You're talking about United States Swimming, USA Track and Field, and Global Athlete all put their two cents in regards to them, like you mentioned, not being able to train at their athletic facilities, not being able to go ahead and violate rules that are being mandated in California and New York, and just to go ahead and keep themselves safe. But when you want, and you talk about the Olympics that happens once every 4 years, the Summer Olympics, and then flipping over to the Winter Olympics, it's a situation to where I would rather them go ahead and push it to 2021. I know that billions of dollars have been spent by Comcast and NBC in regards to broadcasting these games, but you'll still be able to broadcast them. You'll be able to do so in which athletes are a year older. And that's something when you start looking at some of these situations to where I might have finished a year ago if I was a little bit younger, maybe a little bit faster in certain sports. So that may diminish a little bit of it. But at the same time, I think the IOC will eventually, within this next week and a half, make the right decision.
And it's really, it's better for Japan economically if they're able to have the fans watch the games and have all the attention put on them that you normally get that comes with the Olympics. So I think, and hopefully they'll be able to hold it next year, but that should work out better for everyone than holding some kind of limited games this year. The NFL draft, it does look like it's going to go on in April as scheduled, but not quite as scheduled. You know, last week they were saying they were still going to hold it in Las Vegas, but that they wouldn't have fans in attendance. There wouldn't have these fan events. Now the NFL saying that they will not be holding the draft in Las Vegas. They're going to have kind of a studio show with the draft. And they made this announcement, talked with the LA Times here recently, and the commissioner, Roger Goodell, he said, planning for the draft, good example of how we need to think differently and embrace embrace technology and collaborate. We'll use the draft to help support fans and those people impacted in our community. So it looks like they're going to use it for good, maybe raise some charity money out of this. But it'll be interesting to see how they let the guys know that they've been drafted. They're not going to get up there and give a hug to Goodell or anything like that.
It used to be old school to where I personally think there are numerous ways to do this, but one of the best ways that I like to see is when you have your friends and family in your living room and you broadcast from that living room once you get the call from the commissioner. I think that's pretty cool, but it's a situation to where not only talking about the NFL draft, but the benefits with the XFL officially being canceled this season, you look at what they wanted to accomplish, possibly having guys resurrect their football career. That's exactly what is being done by PJ Walker, mm-hmm. the first XFL player being signed now to an NFL roster. I think that's huge. The Carolina Panthers went ahead and signed him as a quarterback. So you're starting to see the growth of football. Football in the XFL was going to go until May, early June, and that was going to give us kind of our fix to where we wouldn't have that 4 or 5 month layover without football. But you're starting to see the success and the seeds of these other leagues go ahead and trickle down and benefit you.
And good on the XFL. They said they were going to go ahead and play or pay the players for the full season, and it looks like they have enough money in store to hold a second season. And with PJ Walker now playing in the NFL, at least competing for a spot, you have to think that more players will sign on there. And a couple last bits of news here just came in over the last hour. Dallas Cowboys center Travis Frederick, the latest to retire at a very early age, just turned 29 years old last week. We're talking about a five-time Pro Bowler here, and he retired just a few minutes ago. He missed all of the 2018 season. I guess it's Guillain-Barre syndrome, which they're saying is a rare autoimmune disease, and Cowboys line just wasn't the same without Frederick in the lineup. Now he's going to go ahead and retire, and kind of following in the footsteps of so many other young NFL players we've seen retire over the last few years. And big news in college basketball for our state: former Ole Miss Blazer during his playing career, also former Blazer assistant coach, South Alabama assistant coach, and longtime head coach for the Ole Miss Rebels, Andy Kennedy, gets signed on at UAB. He's going to be the next head coach of the Blazers. Really cool that he gets a job at his alma mater.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get him on Sports Night here before his full swing recruiting takes place. But congratulations to Andy Kennedy, a wonderful broadcaster, a great coach, has paid his dues, had an opportunity to watch his growth when he was at UAB playing for the legendary coach Gene Bartow. Could absolutely stroke the three ball, and I mean none prettier than when he used to come in and play against South Alabama, not only in Jag Gymnasium but down at the Civic Center as well. I remember those days. But congratulations to him, and I think he'll do a good job resurrecting the UAB program.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see if he can get them to their first tournament since 2015. He's got a long way to go with that program, but I expect him to succeed. And yeah, hopefully we can get him on here on Sports Night very soon. All right, coming up in the next segment, we're talking with Reese's Senior Bowl Executive Director Jim Nagy. I love what the Senior Bowl is doing here. Put out a video series on YouTube helping these players that are trying to get drafted host their own pro days on videos to send out to teams. We're going to talk with Jim about that. Coming up next, you're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. And as promised, talking with Reese's Senior Bowl Executive Director Jim Nagy. Jim, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing good. Not a whole lot of live sports out there to talk about right now. I'm sure we'd be an in-depth conversation about the NCAA tournament and all kinds of other goings on, but it ends up being just months and months more of football talk, so I guess it could be worse.
Yeah, we are kind of unaffected by this thing in some cases, so no, it's good we can talk about it.
And thankfully we made it through the Senior Bowl before sports were canceled because of the coronavirus, but how are things at the Senior Bowl headquarters? You guys, were you going to be on a bit of a break now anyway, or what's going on there?
No, there wasn't going to be any break. It's we were full tilt into the off season, and you know, the move to South Alabama has created a lot of a different workforce this year. We're trying to merge ticketing systems with South Alabama, and so there's a lot on that front. A lot of event stuff, a lot of stuff we had. You know, we had our Hall of Fame event for the spring. that we had to push back. We had a really good class for this year, so I hope we can that was supposed to be in May. Hopefully we can push back to June or July and get that in for for this year. So there was a lot going on, but yeah, we're like everyone. We've had to really adjust to what's going on and really scale back a little bit. We haven't been in the office. This is our second week out of the office. And on the football side, the nice thing is we can all watch tape from home. So I'm watching tape at home. Our three scouting assistants are all grinding away at home, working our way through next year's class.
Yeah.
So at least on the football side, there's still a little normalcy.
And I'm loving the takes you're putting out there on Twitter. You're at @JimNagy_SB for Senior Bowl, but you can tell you're watching tape because you're putting out good takes on a lot of the prospects and even talking some free agency. But the big rollout this weekend, Senior Bowl released an instructional guide along with a video hosted by you to help players properly film their own pro days in order to send out to these teams. When and how did this idea come about, Jim?
It really started thinking about it a couple weekends ago. I started getting hit up by a lot of agents about time in their players. And, depending on which team you speak with, there's about a quarter to a third of this year's draft that still hasn't been worked out yet. So there's a lot of missing data around the NFL. I think people see the Senior Bowl as someone that could help them out in that area. So, I don't want to get on planes and do all that. That was kind of offered up as, jumping around the country, timing players, and that didn't interest me at all. But what I wanted to do for these guys that weren't invited to the combine or some of these small school kids that just never get a chance to get in front of NFL guys is, we put together an instructional video, kind of a step-by-step how-to run a pro day, and not only conduct a pro day, but also film a pro day. So, if you do send the tape out to NFL teams, they can get valid times based off where the cameras are set up. And so, it's been great. We've already had a lot of positive feedback. There's been a couple workouts. We just posted that on Saturday onto our website, and we've already had a couple big workouts sent in, and people have reached out to us and thanked us for walking them through the process and telling us that they used it. So, like I said on Twitter, if it can help one small school kid get signed as an undrafted free agent to a team and start his NFL journey, then it was worth doing. And I think it's gonna really accomplish that. And the great thing is it's gonna live forever. So. Schools and teams can use it, here moving forward.
No doubt about it. The draft starts in Mobile, Alabama, but now it's so valuable when you send out these invites, and unless you're a surefire number one overall pick, and even if you are, you still have that head-to-head competition. The biggest thing I've heard you always stress is, are you a competitor? And as a former NFL scout, I know you know exactly what it means to see these guys compete against others in the trenches or at their skill position, and how important it is, and the light that has shined so brightly on Mobile, Alabama, and the draft really does start in Mobile at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, Corey, I appreciate you using our tagline, but that's important. We want to make the Senior Bowl synonymous with the city of Mobile, and that's been by design. We really, when people think Senior Bowl, we want them thinking of our city first and foremost, and that's why we've been using the draft starts in Mobile over the last 12 months, and not quite 12 months now, but it's all about competing. And when you work for an NFL team, you want those guys that aren't afraid of it. You always are thinking about a guy's second contract. So after you draft them, you hope you make a good enough draft pick that the player turns out to be a good player where you'll want to re-sign him long-term after his fourth or fifth year off that rookie deal. And, that's always important when you're signing him up to that second contract and really giving him the big money. You want to make sure that money won't really affect who they are, So to me, guys that come and choose to, even if they're first round picks, they choose to come to Mobile, out of college, they're making a statement right there that they're going to compete no matter what. So I think it gives these teams a peace of mind as they move forward with a player that they have the right guy, even if we pay this guy down the road, he's still going to work as hard as he's always worked. He's still going to play as hard as he's always played. And, you know, there was a couple guys in this year's draft, Joe Burrow, the LSU quarterback, Derek Brown, the defensive tackle from Auburn. You know, those guys are probably going to be, you know, Joe's probably going to be the first overall pick. Derek's probably going to be somewhere in the, you know, 5 to 10 range, I would guess. So, I mean, I understood it a little bit with when they're that high. I still could make a case that Derek Brown, you know, should have been here. But there were, we had a couple kids decline the invites that were more, you know, down-the-line players, second-round type players, third-round players. And you know, I tried to make that point on Twitter over the weekend because I'm hearing these guys are falling in the draft, you know, and they got bad advice. Whoever told them not to come down here and compete, they got really bad advice because right now they're kind of free-falling league-wide, and it's going to cost them money. And I never want to call kids out on that, but I hope they're reading some of this stuff because, you know, again, there's a lot of money associated when you're up there in the first, second, third rounds of the draft. You fall a few spots, you're costing yourself a lot of money. So, hopefully we can. I think we had 3 or 4 guys turn down our invite this year, decline the invite. Hopefully that number even shrinks more next year.
One of the things I've been thinking about, Jim, are the juniors that entered early and the juniors that could be hurt by the canceling of these pro days and canceling of some of the meetings they might have had with teams. Do you think maybe the NCAA should allow these juniors to come back to school because all of this is so unprecedented?
I think they should consider it, you know, and that sounds self-serving, working for the Senior Bowl. That would help our game next year if some of them came back. But in reality, Dalton, there's a lot of these juniors that we thought might be junior graduates that we scouted, and even if they came back, we probably wouldn't invite them to the Senior Bowl. They made bad decisions to leave, and if they came back, that probably wouldn't even change things for us unless they got dramatically better. But yeah, I mean, there's just too many of these guys make bad decisions. Unfortunately, they listen to the wrong people. But you know, in some cases, it could really help them. You know, and again, it'll help them just going back to school and helping them get their degree. You know, they set themselves up for the rest of their lives. So, I obviously what we're all going through right now is unprecedented. So I think the NCAA should probably, you know, take any measure they can to make this, you know, make this right by these players. So, you know, kind of right or wrong, if you will.
And you know, I got to get a question in about Tua while you have you on. While we have you on, obviously you've been scouting in the NFL for a long time. What do you think all this means for Tua Tagovailoa? I know he was really banking on using the Alabama Pro Day to help show teams that he's healthy. What do you think all this means for him?
You know, I guess I don't know. That's a really good question because I mean, I guess I don't know what those medicals came back like at the combine. I thought it was pretty far-fetched for him to have a real workout, even in April. I mean, that's such a short timetable for that injury. Just talking to doctors and teams that have gone through that injury with players before, to think he could go through a normal pro day and have a real throwing session, I thought was really, really ambitious. But if he could have done it, if he could have done even, you know, an abbreviated workout, it could have, you know, provided teams with peace of mind that maybe he's headed in the right direction. So it definitely didn't work into his favor. You know, all the coronavirus, this definitely hurts him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was going to be a roll of the dice either way, because even if he's healthy, you know, getting healthier, the problem with this hip injury that he's got, there's such a, you know, just talking to teams that have had guys with this injury, there's such a likelihood of reoccurrence with this thing. That you know, whoever, there is an element of roll the dice with this.
I know earlier in this interview you talked a little bit about the ticket exchange with South Alabama, but that's a huge announcement for the Senior Bowl, playing in a first-class facility, new Hancock Whitney Stadium that's going to be on the campus of South Alabama. I know when the rain came the last couple of years, the indoor practice facility was really utilized, and a lot of great things were said about that. But now that the stadium's actually going to be built and up to date, how much of excitement has been generated that you've heard from around the league with that move being getting ready to be made?
Yeah, Corey, that's a good question. We're obviously really excited. We took a walking hard hat tour of the stadium a couple weeks ago now, and it's really exciting. It was the day before they laid the turf down. But no, it even gets you more excited when you get out there and you can kind of visualize what game day is going to look like out there. But we've gotten a lot of good feedback from the league. Saw a bunch of those guys at the combine and, talked to a lot of guys that, and gave them a heads up like, hey, this might be coming here pretty soon. And they were really excited about it. And then we reached out to guys like Ozzie Newsome and John Gruden, and we tried to include a bunch of quotes in our press release from NFL guys. And when we were calling around to try to get people quotes for that, they were all fired up. So again, logistically, I think there was some concern from some people on our end that the NFL wouldn't be happy about the extra drive out to South Alabama. But I put their minds at ease when I said these guys live in their cars now. They're used to driving from Reno, Nevada to Eugene, Oregon, which is a nice 8.5-hour drive or 9-hour drive, and that's just part of the deal when you work in the NFL. So 15 extra minutes behind the wheel to practice is absolutely nothing to these guys. So they're excited about it. Being in the facility is going to be great. And like Corey, you said, with the weather thing, I mean, that's always, as much as it rains down here in January, it's going to be nice to be able to just walk up the hill if we need to and hop in that indoor.
Well, I tell you what, I can't wait for that inaugural game. I know the field is looking nice, the stadium's looking awesome, and I can't wait to see the Senior Bowl take the field for the first time. Jim, thank you so much for joining us on Sports Night tonight, and hopefully we'll get to talk again here before football gets rolling.
Yeah, hit me up anytime, guys. Love talking to you. The draft's going to be a little different this year. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be to Vegas' plan, but if we want to talk a little draft, with the Auburn Bama guys as we get closer, give me a shout.
That'd be great. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
That's Jim Nagy, Reese's Senior Bowl Executive Director, and all kinds of good news coming from the Senior Bowl. Hey, coming up next, we're talking with Greg Allman. He writes about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in The Athletic, and that's coming up in just a minute. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey Labounty with you on this Monday night. And been looking forward to talking with our next guest, especially since the big news last week that Tom Brady decided to sign with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we'll bring on Greg Allman. He's been covering the Bucs for The Athletic. Spent some time before that writing at the Tampa Bay Times. And, Greg, I'm sure it's been for a number of reasons, a crazy week for you there in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, even without Brady, it's just a crazy week, like you say. But, no, off-the-charts circus stuff going on here, yeah.
And I want to let everybody know that the website you write for, The Athletic, just an outstanding sports journalism website. I've been a member ever since they rolled out the website, and right now a free 90-day trial for subscription, and I think you can just go over to The Athletic and sign up for that and get some great writing, including Greg's writing there, who's been talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for a while now, and the big news with Tom Brady signing a 2-year deal with Tampa Bay. What's been the reaction so far among the Tampa Bay faithful?
Yeah, I mean, as you might imagine, a lot of excitement here. I mean, short of winning the Super Bowl 17 years ago, probably the biggest news the franchise has ever had. So a lot of excitement, a lot of season tickets being sold, a lot of jerseys being pre-ordered. This kind of makes them have a national relevance that they really haven't had in a long time.
I think the biggest thing is the large amount of cap space that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have available to them. So talk to us a little bit about, I know the draft's upcoming, what kind of holes the Tampa Bay Buccaneers need to fill besides quarterback now being, again, just TB12. TB, I think that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, they need to find a right tackle. That's probably the biggest need right now, and I think that might very well be what they do with their first-round draft pick. They've got a couple free agents. They still haven't decided that they're re-signing, and if they don't, they have to replace them. So, and Ndamukong Suh, the defensive lineman, was a big part of their run defense last year. If he's not back, they got to find somebody else to kind of take the high number of snaps and the high level of play he had. They had the NFL's number one run defense last year. He was certainly a part of that. Their depth at receiver, if they don't bring back their number three last year, again, is Rashad Perriman. If he's not back, they could maybe add another receiver there, or they could wait in the draft on that as well. Lots of depth pieces all over that they're going to be able to add players here between now and the draft.
What do you think it was? What do you think the reason was that Brady chose Tampa? Was it Arians or the weapons with Evans, Godwin, and the other offensive weapons you got there? Or just was? Do you think maybe the lack of options with other NFL teams maybe not wanting to sign on with a 43-year-old?
Yeah, we really haven't talked to Brady yet. We get him tomorrow afternoon at noon, but I'll be curious to see what he says first, I guess, in terms of what the main things are. You know, Bruce Arians certainly has a reputation of working with some of the best quarterbacks in the league in the last 20 years, talking about Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck and Ben Roethlisberger, Carson Palmer. Like you said, the weapons, I think, probably helped Tampa Bay, and I don't think he's had a 1-2 punch at receiver as talented as what he has with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. They both made the Pro Bowl this past year. Brady hasn't had a receiver make the Pro Bowl since 2013. So that helps. You know, if I were going to be 43 and wanted to keep playing, I'd want to make things as easy as possible around me. So I'm sure that was a factor as well.
You know, I've been seeing a lot of reports out there about Brady and his relationship with Antonio Brown. What have you heard about that? And do you think Bruce Arians would accept Brown if it came down to it?
Yeah, that's something a lot of people ask about. You know, it's interesting. I think Brady and Brown like each other, know each other. Obviously played together one game last year in New England before he was cut loose there. You know, Arians coached Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh. You know, we had talked to him a year ago when things were kind of melting down in Pittsburgh, and it didn't sound like a real hearty recommendation from him. I think he said it was too much diva, had made some bad decisions off the field. Brown would still have to kind of rectify some of the accusations against him in terms of getting cleared by the league to avoid any kind of suspension if he came back anywhere. So you don't know how much clout Brady has in terms of wanting guys here and wanting to bring in certain players he thinks that would work well. So, I mean, you can't rule anything out, but I think if this weren't a situation with Brady lobbying for somebody, I don't think they'd have him coming in.
Defensively, you look at Jason Pierre-Paul, who really has not really been able to play because of the neck injury he sustained, and then the franchise tag being put on Barrett, Shaquille Barrett. Talk to us about defensively, where you mentioned a little bit about the run game and how efficient it was last year for the Buccaneers, but signing those two guys, do you think that that will kind of be where the defense focuses itself going into the next season?
Yeah, I think they got a lot better on defense as the year went on last year. They weren't a very good defense in the first half of the season, gave up about 30 points a game, but got a lot better in the second half. They had a young secondary that kind of learned on the job. Jason Pierre-Paul actually was able to come back and play pretty well. He fractured his neck in a car accident in May last year and came back and played 10 games, played about 80% of the defensive snaps at 8.5 sacks. So did very well to kind of show that he could still play at a high level. That's why they gave him 2 years and $25 million. You mentioned Shaq Barrett. Just had a great breakout season last year. Led the NFL with 19.5 sacks. Set a team record in doing that. He's just back on the franchise tag just 1 year. But those two are definitely, you know, the guys to get the quarterback the best for the Bucs and keep heart to the front seven of that defense.
How has Devin White been performing since he joined the Bucs? I know it's a name a lot of people around here know, of course, his career at LSU. But I kind of expect him to have a good NFL career. I didn't really keep tabs on him during his rookie season, but how's his production coming along?
No, did real well, and especially in the second half of the season. Really kind of got his legs and his bearings. Missed a little bit in the first half of the season with injury. But second half of the year, I mean, he had 2 touchdowns on fumble returns. He forced a bunch of fumbles, had an interception, just was making splash play after splash play. They feel really good about him working next to Levante David as you know, a veteran who's been there 8 years. Those two, you know, in the middle of this defense are very much a strength of that defense. They're excited about what Devin White can do in this second year in the same defense working with Todd Bowles as a leader, too.
The NFC South, again, just got a whole lot more interesting. You're looking at Cam Newton leaving. You're looking at, you know, Tom Brady coming in, Drew Brees goes ahead and resigns, and Gurley now adds an offensive weapon to the Atlanta Falcons. So people kind of overlook and have kind of laughed at the NFC South and have kind of expressed the dominance that the AFC has kind of had. But I think this is going to be one of the most interesting conference races, and I think it probably will go down to maybe week 14 or 15 before we can decide who's going to win this division.
Yeah, definitely could be. Like you said, and it had been kind of the same 4 quarterbacks in this division for 5 years. So big change with Winston gone, with Cam Newton gone. with Brady coming in here and Teddy Bridgewater coming into Carolina. You mentioned Todd Gurley coming into Atlanta. They got Dante Fowler as well. And I think the perception probably going in is that it's still probably the Saints' division to lose. They've won it the last 3 years. I think they, think a lot of what New Orleans has back. Every year we keep talking about this being the last year for Drew Brees. And he keeps coming back and throwing for 4,000 yards every team every year. So I think of it as still the Saints' division to lose, but I think the Bucs are probably right there with Brady now chasing them, and Atlanta could make a case for another team who would compete for a wild card. Carolina's kind of been a rebuild. They've lost a ton of players. They got a new coach in Matt Rhule. It's exciting to start over there, but I think this could be a year where they have some growing pains as they adjust to new personnel and a new coaching staff.
I think one of the biggest questions people had is, why did Jameis Winston not work out in Tampa Bay? I understand that you have the coaching change, but when you're looking at the type of football that Jameis is capable of playing when he's not throwing to opposing teams, he's a quarterback that can kind of rewrite and has, at times, rewrote the history book in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jameis was always a playmaker for 5 years here. He's already the franchise leader in yards and touchdowns. The question was whether he could limit his mistakes. I mean, that was a problem even when he was at Florida State, digging a lot of early holes. And, in college, I think you have the talent around you where you can kind of pull it off and dig out of those holes and pull off the comebacks. And he hasn't had that in the NFL. Hasn't been able to get back and win with any consistency. And that's really what kind of derailed him. I mean, again, he's been a playmaker. Led the NFL in passing yards this past year, threw for 33 touchdowns. That's a team record. But 30 interceptions is just a colossal amount of interceptions. And he lost 5 fumbles. And, 35 turnovers in any kind of season is going to keep your team from being consistent and being in a position to win games consistently.
What kind of situation do you think would be best for Jameis to sign into? And do you think he still considers himself a starter? Maybe he's looking for something that's not quite matching up with what might be the best for his career.
No, I think he definitely wants to be a starter. I think he's a starter in this league. A month ago we were talking about whether or not the Bucs should be franchising him. So I think he's, the problem is there's just not a lot of opportunities left. I mean, he's left with finding a team that kind of has an unsure starter, maybe a young starter that's still wobbly, and not a proven backup already on the roster. So Denver has Drew Locke, who has 5 career starts. Jacksonville has Gardner Minshew, who played really well as a rookie, but is still basically just a 6th-round draft pick. So you don't know how well he'll do in year 2. You'll hear about him maybe being a backup behind some older quarterbacks. You go to Pittsburgh, and Ben Roethlisberger's 38 years old. He's coming off elbow surgery. Steelers certainly probably need to do better at backup quarterback than they had last year, where they had, Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges, playing well, but not enough to keep him in the playoffs without their starting quarterback.
Yeah, maybe Jameis's career can kind of have a Tannehill moment like we saw Tannehill last year. And I was thinking, why not Tennessee? Mariota's out. You got Tannehill there. Tennessee might not be a bad spot, but I agree with you. I think Pittsburgh would be a good spot too, or one of these places where he has a good chance to get in and maybe earn back a starting position. And I guess to wrap up the interview, I know spirits are high in Tampa Bay right now, but what do you think the expectations are for the coming season with Tom Brady now in town? Is it Super Bowl or bust, playoff or bust, or what do they need to do to consider this season a success?
Yeah, it's like everybody kind of sets the bar at a different height. I mean, I don't think Tom Brady would be here unless he thought this was a team capable of a deep playoff run. Bucks haven't been in the playoffs at all since 2007. They haven't won a playoff game since 2003, so you check those two things off the list, that would be a huge year for the Bucs. But Tom Brady, like I said, I don't think he leaves New England and the legacy he had there unless he feels like he can have that kind of success with a new team. So I'm sure he's going to make a deep run. And if you're in the playoffs with Tom Brady as your quarterback, a lot of things can happen from there.
Well, great stuff, Greg, and I recommend anyone out there listening, they read your writings on The Athletic, and what better time than now with the free 90-day trial. Where can people follow you on Twitter and obviously get your writing over there at The Athletic?
Yeah, just on Twitter at my name, just Greg Aumann, G-R-E-G-A-U-M-A-N. Lots of interaction there, lots of followers. Obviously picked up a lot here in the last week or so just with the Brady news. So,
I bet.
Always welcome to have more people there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Greg.
You guys take care. Stay safe.
All right, you too. Greg Aumann covering the Tampa Bay Bucks with The Athletic, and I truly recommend that website. They got great NFL, NBA, NHL, but even the Bama and Auburn coverage there, outstanding stuff. And we appreciate Greg coming on with us tonight on Sports Night. And coming up, we'll wrap up Sports Night for this Monday night. You're listening to 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5, Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Thank you to Reese's Senior Bowl Executive Director Jim Nagy for coming on with us earlier, and also Greg Allman with The Athletic writing about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and what an offseason Tampa's already had. That'll be, I think, the NFC South is easily going to be the most interesting division this coming season. The NBA and NHL, you know, they are the two professional leagues hurt most by this sports shutdown. I think we're on day 11 or 12 without professional sports. So the plans are constantly updating for these pro leagues. And also with the NCAA, will we get any kind of spring practice for football? Doesn't look like there's going to be any spring games. How far will all this stretch into the next league year? Hopefully it doesn't affect it very much, but, you know, it's all projections at this point, so we're not sure.
And I think Commissioner Sankey, when he came out and he officially canceled the spring sports, I think that, you know, a lot of hearts were hurt. But, mm-hmm. I mean, when you continue to look at the situations that's at hand, I think it was a great decision. It was a no-brainer in that situation. But one of the things that has been talked about the biggest, Dalton, is lost revenue, mm-hmm. not only for the NCAA, but you're looking at lost revenue for small businesses, NBA players. I mean, if you're dependent on your pay scale, a projected 60% of their salary will still be owed, as they're going to stop paychecks on April 1st if you decide to do that. So I think that's one of the biggest things to me that sometimes gets overlooked, not to say multimillionaires are hurting, but at the same time, it's about managing that money correctly. But what professional player do you know does not want to receive a paycheck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And before we get any nasty texts, obviously the thing foremost on our minds are our neighbors,
local business owners around here,
people that may be and have lost their jobs because of all this. That's obviously first and foremost, but this is a sports show.
There you go.
And as we talk about athletes, many of whom come from our area and end up in these professional sports, that is something that the NBA will have to address, whether they're going to pay players for missed games. I guess that's some provision in the CBA that if they don't play some games, they don't have to pay the players. I think eventually it'll all get worked out either through lawsuit or a good deed from the team owners. But the NBA is still holding out hope that they'll get to play the season in some form or fashion, wrap up the season, whether that begins immediately with the playoffs as soon as they're allowed to play, whatever the current standings are, which would stink for the New Orleans Pelicans, who had a chance to make a run and get into the playoffs, but that's an option they're looking at, or maybe some kind of weird, you know, just finish the season out with a few games that don't really matter as long as you get them out there on the court.
I think that's going to be interesting to see, because the Olympics, to me, as far as NBA is concerned, when you're talking about now backing up the calendar, you were going to overlap the Olympics and the NBA season. So how are you going to do that? Who was going to go compete? Who was going to represent your country? So that's something that I know will continue to be looked at. But if the Olympics are pushed back to 2021, as they're stating it may be, now that opens up the calendar a little bit and gives the NBA players a little bit more hope that they don't have to focus on go ahead and defending that gold medal that they won in 2016. So that dynamic is going to be real interesting to see. I personally don't think, Dalton, that we're going to have an NBA season just because as we go day by day, I think that the number of players that have been tested positive for it changes the dynamics. It's one thing to play in an empty arena. It's another thing to have players that are continuing to see the virus and who have not been tested for it to affect the rosters and who will actually be on the floor and be able to play.
And the NHL players, not nearly as many as NBA players, but there are a couple that have tested positive for the Ottawa Senators. And you know what we could be looking at, and if it ends like this, it's a good scenario. We obviously don't want this shutdown to keep going and going and going, because that would mean awful things for the economy. But if we're able to get back to sports here in the next couple months, and they are able to wrap up the NBA and NHL and PGA Tour and NASCAR, we're going to end up with all of the great sports right around the same time. I mean, can you imagine flipping from an NBA playoff game over to an NHL playoff game over to the Masters, and then on the other channel you got maybe Alabama playing its opener or Auburn playing its opener? We are truly in uncharted waters. I'm hoping that all of these leagues are able to finish their seasons, but obviously it's a day-by-day thing, and I'm really also hoping that college football and the NFL aren't affected, because I mean, we've got some juicy storylines coming into this next season, especially in the NFC South. And we just talked with Greg Allman about Tampa Bay signing Tom Brady. But look at what the New Orleans Saints have done over this last week or two. They re-signed Drew Brees, just like Drew said that they were going to do. And then they got Malcolm Jenkins, who started his career with New Orleans, went over to Philadelphia for 6 years. Now he's back with the Saints. Re-signed offensive lineman Andres Pete to a five-year contract. Was it a good deal or not? I don't know, but they got him back. And then a signing I'm really excited about, Emmanuel Sanders at receiver. So the options are there for Drew Brees this year.
And that's something that he really needed. I mean, it's a boost in the Saints' offense, and you have the confidence. But, I mean, the biggest thing that has been proved last year in the NFL, you have to have a backup quarterback. And Teddy Bridgewater, moving on, he held it in the road for the Saints and did an outstanding job through the six or seven games that Drew Brees did miss. But with the Saints going ahead and re-signing some of the guys, including Drew Brees, I think that goes to show, as we talked a little earlier about who's favorite to win the NFC South and who's the big dog on the block. It's the Saints right now.
It sure is. And hopefully we get to see them play on schedule this year along with the rest of the sports. And we'll be back next week. Got a lot to talk about. The NFL draft is coming up. Lots of college football to get into. And we're going to keep getting into it right here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.